Hi, everyone. So I wanted to talk about energy access, which is a very unknown term in European nations, because we are like quite lucky that we don't have the problem of energy access. But can anybody guess how many people globally do not have access to electricity? It's 675 million, which is like third largest country in the world if you put so many people. And so and 2 billion people cook with polluting fuels globally. And these 2 billion are generally women, so gendered. And there was a study in Nature which said that along with women, there's an infant who is always latching with the mother. And because they're cooking in polluting fuels, it leads to air quality pollution, and there's a rise in infant mortality. And so we have SDG targets, 17 SDG targets, which are set by the UN nations, UN SDGs. And access to electricity is connected with 74% of them, because you need electricity for cooling, cooking, heating, for anything else. And we know that how access to electricity and without access to electricity changes things. So what we wanted to tell is what is the importance of integrated energy planning. You need to ensure that the demand which is coming up for electricity should be matching with the supply for electricity. And this is across all the nations. And we also saw during the Russia-Ukraine war that how the demand was there, but the supply was going down. And we also need to ensure that we are actually incorporating a cost-effective, decentralized renewable energy into the energy mix, so that, you know, they grow, and they grow in a sustainable and carbon-friendly manner. And why your energy planning needs to be inclusive? It needs to include the needs for different sectors of the society. It needs to talk about what are the people looking at the bottom 30% of the pyramid, or what are the energy requirements at a different geographical level. So what we did, we had three, there were three reasons we thought of developing a platform called Energy Access Explorer. One thing was, traditionally in the energy sector, it is either supply side driven or demand side driven. It doesn't bring in both the demand and supply at the same space. And it is very important that we bring in demand and supply at the same space, so that the solutions which are given are viable to the consumers as well as the utilities and the DISCOMs. And we wanted to reduce the reliance on geospatial expertise and programming for the users. Here our users are end-line ministries, like your education ministry, health ministry, utility department. So they don't have to, you know, depend on high and expensive geospatial softwares and programming expertise. And we believe a lot on data open source solutions. And the idea was that because we're working in under-resourced or underdeveloped country, we wanted to have an open source initiative so that it can reduce the software engineering cost when we want to go for the future development. But what we say is that the code and everything is open source, but data can be open access or with restriction depending on the sensitivity of the data. So we ended up developing Energy Access Explorer. And this is the only digital public good in SDG 7. So we are hoping that more and more, you know, energy tools, open source energy tool, actually take it up and become digital public good. And so what we did is, like, we bring the data and tools together for an interactive analysis on the fly, for bringing energy demand and supply for multidimensionality of energy access. What it does is, it is data-informed, integrated, equity-driven, and inclusive. So we allow users to have high-resolution priority areas for intervention. This is done by on-the-fly multi-criteria analysis, which goes up to 100 meter of resolution. We can even go to 10 meter if we have the data, but what happens is, like, your solar irradiance data or wind speed data is generally not at that resolution. Then it also acts as a dynamic information system for data providers. So, like, a state government in India is using the backend to just store all the data, and then it becomes one place for all the data for them. You can use it to track changes over the time. Like, you know, you can use how a particular scheme has been bringing in the changes over time and space. We have the data from census data, satellite data, global data, national data, and primary data. Is an example how we have added demand data, which then comes from what is the demand which is coming up for electricity, or what are the supply options? What is the physical infrastructure which is present, or what are the different energy sources? It can be small hydro, it can be wind, it can be your geothermal or bioenergy, depending on the area. So what we have done is, for the front end, the data analytics, there's no need for programming and geospatial expertise. The users have been trained to actually put their data, do the analysis. And then we have a backend for which we don't expect people to have programming, but a very basic GIS expertise. Yeah, So EA's backend is, so what we have is we have automated data processing. Because we are putting a lot of data, we ended up building a tool called Paver. This is using JDAL in Golang. What it does is it automatically picks the data which the line ministries and different departments are putting up. And then it converts the data, reprojects the data, and maps the data depending on the need. Then it has a dynamic database. We use Postgres and Postgres. We have data storage. We use Amazon S3. We have a customized content management system, which is very important because as we are growing, we are able to use the modularity of the different different modules. And we also wanted to have the coherence and convergence of different countries. And we have a variety of base map, which we get from a map box. And we have a modular API, which connects everything together. And this is the backend. What we have done is, according to the different roles and responsibility, people of the partnering institutions and data provider, they can add the data, they can edit the data, they can decide where to put the data. So we have also, the website is on production, staging, training, and development. So the idea is that production is visible to everybody else. Staging is where we put some of the data which is not available for open access. Training is where we are training our local partners and the government officials. And how we are developing is anywhere we go, we map the stakeholders. Then we see, are there other geospatial tools in energy access space available there? Then we do data collection harmonization. And we also keep on enhancing the web infrastructure with new features and functions according to the area. We do capacity building. And the idea is ultimately that local government and local working group actually take the administrative rights. And we then support from the back end. And then we give them technical support. So this is just small fact. Currently, we are covering 32% of the total unserved and underserved population globally. We started from 3 countries, and now we are at 23 geographies. We are lucky that we got a partnership with more than 200 stakeholders. And because this is such a niche subject, that having 25,000 returning users is a very big achievement for us. I'll just walk through very quickly about how we have been working in different sectors by providing energy as an thing. So we start with productive uses of energy for agriculture. So the productive uses is very critical for the growth, especially in the agriculture activities. And in Africa, around 17% of the people, 17% of the GDP is on agriculture. So can we actually map the product, where are the productive uses? If they need energy, do they need cold storage? Where are the grid system? How do you actually ensure the grid goes there? Then similarly, in Kenya, there's a rule which the government has got a rule that every county needs, we have municipalities, Ogimente in Europe, they have counties, needs to make a county energy plan every 2 years. So this is a county energy plan which we help them make for Makueni County. So what we do is we actually start with capacity building, understand the data, and we also use different models. Like for this model, we use least cost electrification, which is also an open source model. And we use on stove for cooking scenarios, that what will be the demand of cooking, what will be the demand of electrification. And then all the data was integrated so that you know where, how, and how to do, how much will it cost. And then we actually ended up making a county energy plan with them. So this was very recently launched by the governors, Council of Governors in Makueni County. And then we work on powering healthcare with the different health ministries. So what we did was you took what is the healthcare facility, and then you actually using the population density and time taken to travel, we actually calculated what is the energy required for each and every facility using RAMP model. So RAMP is also an open source model. So when you got electricity required for every day, you can actually combine it and get the electricity for the whole country. What it helps is, now the Ministry of Uganda has better negotiation for operations and maintenance when they're putting a PV solar system. Because if you're doing one healthcare facility, they don't have very bigger bargaining skill. But if you're doing for, say, thousands, you can say that we need 5 years of operation and maintenance. Because one thing is to install. The second thing is that it should run for the long time. So similarly, this was done in Jharkhand, a small state in India, where we helped them to prioritize which healthcare facilities should be solarized first. And using this, they actually ended up solarizing 300 healthcare facilities out of 3,000. So we also work for Makueni County with UK Pact to how to decarbonize transport sector, because everybody is now talking about put EVs. But if you're putting electric vehicles, you need to understand where to put electric vehicles and from where the supply of electricity will come for the electric vehicles. Otherwise, if you're just thinking of putting electric vehicles, after a point it will go away. People need to have, like, it's like if you have IC engine, there is no fuel, people will stop saying. So we did this to identify, yes, these are the places, because there's a 1 billion project to electrify Kenya with electric vehicles. And the last example is, this was done with World Bank. They used analysis from EAE to identify where are the 145 woridas where more than 19 million people are living to prioritize for off-grid electrification. And I'll stop here. So what we have done is we are very focused on equity. So equitable access to electricity. We need equitable access to software so that the stakeholders who have been left from the conversation can actually get, you know, granular data and analytics and gain insights. And we believe in cross-sectoral EAE working group. So each and every geography where we go in, we have local capacity building, local working group, so that they actually take it forward and it is according to the need of the geography, not according to the need of us. And I'll stop here. So, sorry. So we have the code available in GitHub. The website is also there. And we are lucky enough to have a EAE training module. And I'll stop here if there is any question.
You have like 4 minutes for Q&A.
I have lots of time. Please ask questions. Yes, please.
I would imagine you ingest data from many different sources in many different formats. How do you handle this in the various geographies?
So what we do is, thankfully, due to our local capacity building, local working groups, we train them how to upload the data. And we actually ended up building a tool called Paver, which does, so here we have automated data processing tool Paver, which using JIDAL in Golang we have built it. So it takes the data, it harmonizes the data, it ensures that it fits into the parameters we need it. So it does reprojection from one projection system to another projection system. We calculate Euclidean distance, because sometimes you want to know from how many kilometers away from the road network is the healthcare facility. So it calculates the distance. It then masks the data. So everything is reprojected in the way it aligns with the software. Any other question? Yes, please.
How long has this been running and who's funding it? Sorry, I missed that.
So we started it 7 years back. We are not very big. And we launched our first system in 2019. And now we started with Tanzania, Zambia, and Uganda. Now we are in 23 geographies across sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia. So we have 200 plus partners. Right now we are grant-based. So we have funding from SNV, we have funding from IKEA, 3M, Good Energies, Dune Foundation. But we are hoping to make it a little bit more sustainable and more responsible DPG, that it slowly, you know, gets into revenue. We don't want revenue from the government's partners or others. But right now, African Development Bank is using it. So can they actually use it for, you know, can it be consultancy for African Development Bank? So that's the idea.
How many developers?
Oh, we are a very small team. Yeah, so we are a team of 7 people.
Whoa. A third of the world's unelectrified.
Yes.
So I think many of the projects presented here today would be eligible for a digital public good. What is the benefit from you being a digital public good?
So for us, because we are a very big believer of digital public, so open source data, open access, open policy. So digital public good is like a stamp that, yes, you know, and it's like open source, it's like rectangles and squares. Every square is a rectangle, but all rectangles are not square. So all open source are not digital public good, but digital public goods are open source. So to be a digital public good, one of the criteria is that it should fulfill any of the SDG targets, the 17 SDG targets for equitable development. Then so you get a community of different digital public goods. We also had a stand yesterday of an Edge Access Explorer. So a lot of people came, and then you get community support. And then we also talk about more of collaboration, that how do you collaborate between digital public goods. And it's also some of the donors, they want people to have open source and digital public goods.
Very impressive, 7 people.
Yes, please.
Places and geographies where there is no energy accessibility. But then, do you leverage on these, like, sell these to actual that energy producers? Or is this something that then the government takes?
So we actually work with AMDA, which is African Mini-Grid Developer Association. They use it to actually identify where to go. So what they do is, like, if people have purchasing power capacity, they are away from the grid connection, and the solar radiance is good, so they can go and put mini-grid, and people can afford it. While the government uses it for, while the government uses it to find which are the 30% people in the bottom of the pyramid who can't pay for things, so they use it as assistance which can be provided for the people. So we work with different partners, and, you know, depending on the need. Yeah, but if you have any question, you can reach out to on me on Energy Access Explorer. Thank you so much.